John?
Hi, Drew.
Yeah, have a seat.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, no, thank you.
How'd you hear about us?
I've been in the market for a little while and looking for a way to utilize my skills and everything. This seemed like a really great fit. It's a really good organization. I'm really anxious to be a part of it, honestly.
I see here it says you have some experience.
Yes.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I'm really great with the public.
Yeah.
I also work really well as a team player. Yeah. I've had a lot of experience solving problems and.
What would you say is your worst trait?
Oh boy, I tend to get really involved, and sometimes it's a little hard to step away, from things. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that everything is in order, before I leave for the end of the day.
Okay. I got to tell you, John, I like what I hear.
Thank you.
I think Stew's Cheese Dogs has found its new cheddar slinger.
I'm Drew.
And I'm John.
And you're listening to The Hourchive, our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
You grow up, right? You grow up. Everybody is born and they're a baby, they're an infant, and then they're like a toddler. Then they become like a kid. My girlfriend would say that you're a baby until you're like 7.
Oh, that's a long time to be a baby.
She calls all children babies. Huh. Anyway, then you're like a preteen,
yeah,
right? And then you're a teenager,
yeah,
and then you hit the age of like 14 to 15, and it's time, maybe not everyone, but I think for a significant portion, it's time to enter the workforce.
You got needs at that point.
You reach
a certain point where, for the most part, I think if you're in a good, supportive family environment, you've got people who are looking out for you and providing the essentials for you.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you decide that the essentials are not enough.
Yeah.
And you need wide leg jeans.
Well, you're the Venn diagram of your essentials and your parents' essentials no longer intersect.
Oh, yeah,
right?
They start to diverge.
That little piece gets smaller and smaller.
Yeah, yeah.
Until all that it contains is shelter and food.
Yeah,
right.
In like the most like general sense. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Like the most maybe basic you're sense. Utilizing the shelter and maybe you're eating the food.
But yeah, you have desires and needs and wants that go beyond what your parents or your supporters are willing to provide.
Yeah.
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 Or they're just, they won't provide the ones that you want.
Right. Yeah. That they sort of come at you and say, well, if you want that.
Yeah. This is what happens.
That's what starts.
They come at you. Dad. Yeah. I really need this converter that I'll turn this video cassette into screenshots so I can put it on my computer.
Wait a minute. Need or want?
That's what it always, that's the thing, right?
I don't know if you need that.
It becomes a...
Explain to me why you need that.
Because it's cool. That need versus want, I really becomes impressed upon you because I've used that on people.
Oh yeah, where you
need it?
Put them to the put the blocks to them.
Yeah,
be like, yeah,
yeah.
You think you need that?
Yeah,
you think
you
need
that?
Why do you need it?
Yeah,
I think you want it.
Oh, you're gonna die without it.
You're gonna stop breathing.
Yeah, you. They come at you and they're like, "I'm not gonna buy you that." And if you want it so bad, get a job.
Use your own money.
Yeah, use your own money.
Yeah,
which.
I don't have any money.
Yeah.
Well, then I guess you better get a job.
And by this point, generally, probably if an allowance is still in existence,
mm-hmm.
it's meager,
right.
isn't it? It's certainly not.
Well,
enough.
In comparison
to what
yeah,
need.
What you want
need.
Or need, yeah, what you need.
I need. And so you got to get a job, but you're a kid. You got to go to school.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't just walk into the nearest lawyer office and
right.
get
Make
a
partner.
Job. Yeah.
Even if you're a great lawyer.
Yeah, and you may be at 15.
Yeah. You don't have the time.
Yeah.
You simply you get, don't. I mean, you have to go
school's getting
to school.
In the way. School's always getting
school
in the way.
School is what? 6 to 8 hours of your day.
Yeah. Right in the middle of the workday, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you could feasibly, like, work from 3 until late.
Sure.
Right? But there are laws against it.
Are there?
So, well, I mean, labor laws, right? You
can't, well, maybe.
Kids can't work after a certain
Oh, yeah,
of time.
Yeah, yeah. They have to, yeah. There's, like, curfews and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Not curfews, but just, like.
No, there are curfews.
Yeah.
Don't try to tell me that there aren't curfews.
I don't think they're enforced. Anyway, so you need to get a job, but you're going to have to get a part-time job.
Yeah.
This is what it all comes down to, right?
Yeah.
And the part-time job, there's no at this point in your life.
It's your yeah. When you are introduced to the workforce as a teenager,
yeah.
it is via a part-time job. Most likely.
Well, your first part-time job, did you get paid minimum wage at the time? Was like that your first, or did you start ahead of the curve?
No, I think I was making minimum at the time.
Yeah, I started at minimum wage.
Yeah.
at my first job, but I got raises. I mean, I you know,
I don't know that I don't know. I don't think I was at my my job, my first part time job.
Yeah.
I don't think I was there long enough to net a raise. I was only there during the school year. And it was the kind of thing where it was right near the school.
Yeah.
So I could go there after school for a few hours and work.
My first job, I was there for almost 4 years.
Wow.
But I want to hear about this.
I worked at a collection agency.
What?
Yeah. My very first job.
It's like a grown-up job, though.
Well, kind of.
You did walk into a lawyer's office.
But it wasn't like, you know, I wasn't going into the office in the morning and, you know, standing by the water cooler and
you could
yeah,
have.
You know, I would go there after school
and stand by the water
and stand
cooler.
By the water cooler.
Was it like
I worked
an
from,
office?
I worked from like 4 to 8
but did,
or four
it,
to seven.
Was it like an office? Like,
yeah.
Did you have to wear?
It
like,
was in a little office
clothing?
Park. I would just wear my school clothes. I was
wow.
coming. I was literally walking from school
yeah.
up to this office.
You like one day they just pulled you inside.
No, actually, my dad
hey,
knew
kid.
The people. Hey, where are you walking? Want some money?
Yeah.
Come into this office and take calls from weirdos.
Yeah, what was the job?
I did a lot of data entry.
Okay.
So this collection agency, they worked for like a supermarket, or I think Blockbuster was one of their clients.
So
these are people
I honestly,
who...
Honestly, when you said supermarket, I honestly expected you to say Super Mario. that they work for
some of their clients include Super Mario.
Well, he was a
Link.
Plumber.
He was a plumber.
I mean, maybe he had people stiffen him on. On
yeah, it seems likely. Well, I mean, he's always out running off chasing.
He's
you know,
trying to collect every coin
princesses.
He finds, right? Anyway, he wasn't a client.
No,
supermarket,
video stores.
Okay,
I don't know who else, but it was all like it was like these are not like huge. Like they weren't going after people who had like major credit card you know, dead or anything like that. This is just people who like never returned a video.
Yeah. I've been that person.
I maybe came after you.
I
didn't, but
I had, I think I had a Blockbuster video that was out for maybe a week or 2 weeks past due, mm-hmm. and I got a letter from collections.
I think we, yeah, initially it starts with the letter. That's the way it was with this.
Yeah.
So I would enter these things, and like the company would send the things over to us. Like, so Blockbuster would send us a list of people and how much they owed and what it was for. And I would put it into this company's database.
Yeah.
And occasionally somebody would call and I would take the call.
Okay.
And then I would connect them to whoever was the person they were supposed to talk to.
Oh, okay.
And these people all had fake names. Like, yeah. all of the employees that actually dealt with the public,
they
all had fake names.
Nice.
So,
do you get to make up your name?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So the one guy, his name was Don Wayne. That's the only one I remember. It was this dude. He was a really nice guy, but he would sit there and he would just like lotion his hands all night long and take calls.
Oh.
And then he would leave his name. Like, so you get the letter first of all, and if that doesn't work, then you get a call.
Yeah.
Somebody actually calls you. And so he would call these people, and of course they are not there. But then he would say, yeah, can you just tell him that Don Wayne called? And it never failed. He would always be like, no, Don. D-O-N. Don Wayne.
That's
like
amazing.
John Wayne, but Don Wayne. Yeah.
That's so awesome. Did you have a fake name?
I didn't have a fake name, but I would just answer and say, like, yeah, this is
you could,
collection
right?
agency. I could have thrown in a name. I should have. That would have made it more interesting. That was the thing about that job. It was so...
You could have been like, this is Dean Autry. Right?
Yeah. Hi, this is Dean Autry. How can I connect you? I got a few like really angry people that called me.
This is Flint Eastwood.
I wish I could remember some of the other ones. They were not nearly as
creative. I mean, as creative.
They weren't as groundbreaking as Don Wayne. Yeah.
Oh wow. So when people called, you'd be like the
receptionist.
Yeah. Basically. Were they mad?
Yeah, usually. They'd be like, why is this person calling me? And I'd be like, I don't know. I'll have to connect you. And they'd be like, why don't you connect me?
Why is Don Wayne calling?
Yeah, I got the call from this Don Wayne. I don't know who the hell Don Wayne is.
Wow.
Yeah, people would get upset.
So how would you, were you just trying to stay calm? And
yeah. Yeah, I would just be like.
Well, you
like,
were a teenager.
I'm sorry, I'll connect you. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
You couldn't care less.
I was never like accountable for anything that was happening there. I was really just the conduit for these crazy people and their
That's
collection
awesome.
Things. But man, I was so bored and it you know, it was coming at the end of a school day. So I was getting up at like 5 or 6 to go to school and then immediately going from school to this place and staying there for 3 hours.
How like was it every day?
No, I think it was like Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday or something like that. Yeah. But so I would literally like, I would go into the bathroom and I would just nod off. I would sit in the stall and just like try to take like a little
Who's
nap.
Who's answering the phone while you're doing that?
I guess they answer it directly. I guess it would just funnel to the other desks or whatever.
Did you have to announce like I'm going to the bathroom?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like
a kid's been in the bathroom
every
for
phone,
half an hour.
Like everybody has the same system.
Yeah,
you know, they're all connected
to
the line. So if I wasn't there
and
they see the thing ringing, somebody would just,
I think
know,
he's asleep
it.
In the bathroom again.
I don't know if they ever caught on to that because I would go to the bathroom like 4 or 5 times a shift. And,
that's the best thing is to go to the bathroom while you're working. You're getting paid to go to the bathroom. It's great, in my opinion.
I don't know. I tend to spend as little time as possible.
I'm just saying, like,
you know,
you're not getting paid at home.
That's true. It's on your own time at home.
Yeah.
It's on their time when you're working.
That's right.
They can take a lot away from us. They can take our pensions away. They can take our...
Imagine if you had had, like, an iPhone at that point.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And you, like,
just play games in there and
yeah.
watch videos. This is totally not the same job, but I was in a stall one time at a previous employer, and I overheard, audio from the stall next to me. And I recognized it.
What was it?
It was the movie trailer for Return of the Living Dead from 1985. And I remember thinking, like, what's weirder? What's weirder in this situation? The fact that there's a dude in this bathroom watching the Return of the Living Dead trailer on his phone.
Right.
Or the fact that the guy sitting next to him in the stall recognizes it, and that guy's me.
Right at the age that you could start working at the time, which was like 14 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister worked at Fritz's Frozen Custard. Still does. I think I've said this before. She's still there.
Nice.
Basically runs it now. But at the time, she was a manager or a shift leader or something. I don't know.
Uh-huh. All those weird titles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she got me a job there. This is my first job. I think it was my first job. Yeah, it was. And I remember the first day, like I, you know, it was a day shift because they start you off easy. And I was the day there. Shift. It was me and some other dude. We're both new. And my sister was there, but she wasn't working. She just sort of like helped me out a little bit, I think. And then she left, and then the other manager that was there sort of took over. But I stayed there for almost 4 years. I worked my way up. I was a shift leader by the time I left.
Now, what does a shift leader do? Is that basically like you're the manager for that shift?
Yeah. You're sort of like you're not a manager, but you can do all the things a manager does. So you would be... If the manager's not around, you're the next in line to like make decisions.
Right.
Or assistant manager. There was a manager, an assistant manager, and a shift leader, and then just everybody else.
Weird hierarchy.
Yeah. And it was a cool job though. I mean, I started at minimum wage.
Right.
It was a job where the skills you learned, I think, really only, for the most part, pertained to that job. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, you learn social skills, obviously, and you learn how to be an employee.
You learn how to anticipate the crazies, is what you learn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
which is the most important.
But the job skills, I guess, are very specific to.
They're specific to that industry. I mean, I feel like, you know, you could probably like go from there and be like you could go to another food beverage service place and be like,
maybe. Yeah, but the thing is, there was no waiter. You know, there's no table service.
Right. You're at a window. Right.
There was no drive through. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're at a window.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of a particular skill set that you learn.
So did you when you got this job, were you excited, reluctant, mix of both?
I was excited beforehand. When I got there, I got really scared because I wasn't good with new stuff, like new situations. Really scared me. So initially I was actually really
frozen custard place.
My sister and I, you know, growing up, we had a very antagonistic relationship, and you know, I think it was still, you know, kind of antagonistic when I started working there. Mm-hmm. But I remember being relieved that she was there when we got there.
So but you were working during the same shift, like, with her when you started?
Initially. Uh-huh. But she didn't work. She only came in to sort
she didn't
of
work.
Get me started. She came in to get me going, you uh-huh. know, like, sort of, and maybe put me at ease.
Yeah.
But then she left. So the rest of the shift, she's not there.
Oh, nice. So first day, you're thrown to the,
yeah, it was terrifying.
The custard wolves.
It was terrifying. And like I said, it was funny because my sister and I we fought all the time. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I wish she was here still because I don't know anything.
Yeah.
I'm lost.
And you weren't the only one
and
there,
it,
right?
And again, so let's compare, you know, with your first job.
Mm-hmm.
You're answering phones. You've answered phones before in your life.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You've talked to humans.
I've talked to weirdos.
Yeah. 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 So there's some.
I'm taking wrong numbers.
There's some familiarity.
Yeah.
Now, I get there. I've never done any of the stuff that's there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never poured a bag of of cream, milk, egg, like, combination into a giant machine,
right?
And then turn on that machine in a specific sequence of switches and dials, and then had to like hope that frozen custard came out the other end, right?
Did it always work, or did you make errors? Did you?
Yeah, I made errors. Mm. I mean, it was. Yeah, everyone did. I remember this specifically because so the way that I guess frozen custard works, and probably any ice cream place really, because it wasn't soft serve. Everyone, that was a thing. Like, everyone was like surprised it wasn't soft serve.
Mm-hmm.
But what we would get is we'd get these shipments of these plastic bags. It's about the size of like a throw pillow.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a spout with a cap.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go back into the cooler, and they're all hanging on the wall. No, they're in crates. They're in milk crates.
Okay.
But the empty ones are hanging on the wall. All right?
Still got it.
Yeah, I still got it. I could go back today. So you grab one of these bags. Like, the manager would say, go get a bag of vanilla and put it in the hopper.
Right.
Okay? They're heavy. And they're unwieldy, and it's like you pick it up. There's no handle or anything. It's like you're holding a bag of water. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? That's the size mm-hmm. of a throw pillow. You lug it out to the machine, and the hopper is at the top of the machine, right? So you have to walk up these little steps. There's two machines. Walk up between them. Now it's the balancing act, all right? And if you've never done this before, it's like...
I've not done this.
No, well, I mean, like, this is the mindset. Like, you're like, right. What do I do? You get up there, you walk up there, and there's a lid, and you have to pull off this metal lid. You got to do something with that, because you need both your hands to...
to pour, sure.
So you're like, I guess I'll just put this on top of the other lid, because there's two hoppers in one machine.
See, I would put it between my legs and, like, squeeze it with my knees. That's...
So that thing would invariably slide off.
Uh-huh.
And it's really loud because it's metal. All right. Now you got to get the little cap out of the spout. And this is potentially a huge mess.
Oh, right. Because the stuff could come
out. There's nothing to stop it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're holding it wrong, you're going to squeeze it out. You don't know this the first time you do it, right?
Right.
So you kind of, and you don't know how hard is you need to pull.
So wait, you're not watching somebody do this first, like you.
You've watched it, but you can't even watching it. You have no idea.
Hmm.
You could watch it all day, you wouldn't know.
You won't know it until you're there, man.
So you yank this thing out. You're probably a mess. Make a little mess.
Yeah.
And now you're holding this bag of egg. Water, whatever, crap, custard, right?
Right.
And you have to upend it into the hopper.
Okay.
Keep in mind, like, I don't know if I can if I'm making this clear, like how unwieldy this bag is.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can picture it like a big bag of liquid.
Yeah, yeah, imagine you're holding a bag of liquid. You know, if you're holding a bucket of liquid,
right?
It's easy. Turn that bucket over, right?
Yeah.
The bucket's rigid. It's going to be fine.
Right.
But the bag is like moving around in your hand.
Yeah, it's like trying to carry a waterbed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you got to upend this thing and, you know, hold on to the spout because it's going to go crazy.
Yeah.
You finally get it in. Everything's going in there. And then you got to, like, you know, not all of it comes out. You got to squeeze it all out and wring it out and stuff, yeah. Right? And you better hope that you closed the little spout inside of the machine when you decided to pour it in there. Otherwise, that's going to make a mess.
You're still haunted by this, aren't you?
So you fill it up, right? You put the cap back on.
Mm-hmm.
You put the lid back on. Now you come down those little steps. You open the little door in the side of the machine, and there's like a little toggle, mm-hmm. like a little thing. And you open, it's like a valve, I guess. You open the spout, and you see the little stream of custard come through.
And then you're good.
Then you got to switch on the machine.
Okay.
And it starts to make noise. What if it makes a terrible noise? Because you did something wrong. That can happen. It has happened. That machine was incredible, though.
Do you remember what it was called? Custard maker?
I think it was just called the machine.
The machine.
I think.
Put it in the machine.
When we closed, everyone was given different tasks to do
mm-hmm.
for cleanup. And if you were on machines, you had to clean the machines. It's a whole other thing. It's a whole other thing with this machine. There's this... This is probably the most boring thing.
I'm fascinated by, like, the... the level of terror that this machine held.
I mean,
over
I grew
you.
To love it because it was like I felt competent because I could handle this thing.
Oh, sure. Like you knew the machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you cleaned it on the face of the machine, and like customers can see this part of it, like there's, you know, this kind of spout and the custard's coming out in like a ribbon into a bucket where
right.
we, you know, like. And then you kind of push it down with the spade so it fills up all the way. You don't, you know, waste a lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the night, you know, you're out of the custard and you have to clean that machine. And mm-hmm. that spout thing, you unscrew that metal face and you pull it off. And there's this long tube into the machine. And in the middle of that tube, there's a rod that turns, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You
had to clean all of this?
Oh, yeah.
Every night?
So you had to reach into this thing and pull... The rod had these, like, plastic... Some of them were plastic, some were metal, like teeth almost,
mm-hmm.
that would churn the custard.
Mm-hmm.
So it would go through this thing, this super cold tube,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the thing would churn it, and
while
it would
chilling.
Turn into...
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, so you'd reach in there and you have to pull this rod out and basically it's been in there all night and it's really cold, so you know you have to really yank on it, and you pull that out. You got to disassemble all the teeth. You put everything in this rack, and then you put that and you go take it to the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to clean the inside and wipe it down and all this stuff. Whatever. It was great though. I liked that machine. I liked it. But everyone's watching.
Get it right.
What did you like best about that? What
job?
Yeah. What did you enjoy most?
Well, I'll not count. Like, what I liked most was the I made tons of friends there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they became my friends that I hung out with throughout high school and a lot of college. And but I'll sort of discount that as like, you know, only because like the job, you know, that wasn't the job.
Right.
Like we all just happened to be there and we would hang out elsewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like that, I didn't like the job didn't, it wasn't part of, my job was not to have friends.
Right.
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 I think what I liked most was dipping.
Oh, like a coating on the
no,
that's dipping.
See, I mean,
I'm not. I admit, I'm not privy right. to the
again another thing
insider talk. I don't know.
Yeah, it's totally unfamiliar, isn't it?
Yeah,
but what it really is it's scooping.
Okay,
so dipping was if you were on the dipping station
mm-hmm.
for a shift. You were the one when the person on the register is like, I need a small Oreo concrete. You're the one who's going to scoop the ice cream into the cup and set it down for the topper.
Okay.
So on the surface, that seems like an easy job, yeah?
Okay.
However,
I have a feeling that there's another layer to it.
Oh, there is. The thing is, you're dipping, all right,
mm-hmm.
for at least two windows, right? You have two people at windows calling orders back to you.
Sure. And you're the only dipper.
You are the liaison between the people at the window and the people making the desserts.
You are like the skin on the outside of the Terminator. Like the machine is back there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like all gears and cold steel.
Yeah.
And then out in the world, there's Sarah Connor and John Connor ordering ice cream.
That's right.
And you are the synthetic skin over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes perfect sense.
So like you've got two windows calling back orders. I need a large this. I need a regular that. Right. And they're just going like they're not concerned with you.
Yeah.
Your job is to keep up and they know
the orders. Yeah.
Right. The only time they get concerned about you is when you're doing a bad job and their orders aren't coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they're calling back orders and you're setting them up, putting the custard in there and telling the toppers what to make. You're like, that's a mini cookie dough.
Okay.
Okay. So it's easy if it's one window, you know, and they're just taking a customer at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's two windows and they're coming at you pretty fast, then your orders are backing up next to you as the toppers are making them one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Right. And so you have to remember every single thing that you put in.
Oh,
now there's like the witching hour. Okay. When the sun is going down, right. It's the twilight. Dusk.
Yeah, dusk.
Right? So we would get busy at night.
Things, sure.
And there were four windows. And you'd have a station, dipping and topping station for two windows, right?
Okay.
However, at dusk, when you're transitioning from just having two windows open into all four windows open, at a certain point, you have to open a third window while you're prepping that other station.
Oh.
So only the most skilled and adept dipper could handle three windows.
Were you a three-window dipper?
I was the three-window dipper.
I never would have doubted you.
You don't make shift leader if you can't dip three windows. You had to learn some tricks. I would make desserts myself.
Wow. Wait, you would dip and top?
Yeah.
Wow.
If it was something I could do, like,
did everybody hate you?
Seconds,
were they all like, they were like, look at this show off. Yeah. Look at this guy.
They hated
dipping
me
and topping.
They hated me, but they also admired me, right?
They respected you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you'd learn tricks, you know, like if it was a small M&M, you'd run over real quick and you'd grab a couple M&Ms, toss it in there.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to remember it. It's M&Ms. I don't have to tell you either. Just make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You look, see there's M&Ms in there.
The tricky ones were the sundaes because, like, you know, let's say you put a pecan on there. What's that mean? Is it a turtle? Is it a...
I mean, I feel like you're training me as a topper right now.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going through like topping boot camp here. So you're you have to what's that pecan mean, huh? What's it mean? Come on, orders are coming at you. Think.
You'd have to choose the topping that most, you know, embodied that dessert.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, you had to have a symbol, I guess, right?
You know what the key was for the turtles? Turtles got two cherries on top.
Okay.
So you just grab two cherries, put on top. They know what it is.
Did you devise this system yourself?
No, it was in place.
Oh, okay.
The other tricky thing, man, again, this is like the most boring thing. The other tricky thing was that we had these little shortcakes.
Hmm. Oh, for like strawberry shortcake. Oh, yeah.
That's got to go in first. You can't put ice cream in there or custard in.
No.
First.
No.
So if all the toppers are busy, I got to go down under the station, the little counter, and grab one of those things while they're calling back orders.
Oh.
Let me tell you. I'm getting a flood of memories.
Like, yeah, sweating here.
I'm getting a flood
here.
Of memories. This is like... There was a little cabinet under the topping area where you kept backup toppings and stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to have to run back to the store area in the middle.
That's what the runner's job was.
Oh, you had a runner?
Yeah.
Oh, man, this is a...
And the runner had to,
well-organized
keep the supplies
operation.
Up. You had dishes. Mm-hmm. Like, people are doing... the runner did the dishes. So during a shift, you're still having to keep... You have to clean dishes while you're doing the shift because you're going through all these dishes. And so the runner was in charge of keeping the dishes coming. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. But you liked being there in the crunch. You liked being the dipper.
I did. Mm. I liked it.
Hmm.
It's a good job. It'd be fun to like do again for a night. Maybe for an hour. Not like all night.
You'll do it until about dusk and then you'll be done.
Then I'll go outside and I'll order something.
Yeah. Four things from every window.
We wore we had to wear like a button up white shirt and a bow tie. We had like clip on bow ties we had to wear.
I bet that was the first thing that came off when you were done.
Yeah, man.
Bow tie.
You know it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you had to wear like a apron and black slacks or whatever.
Yeah, to look professional.
Yeah. Yeah, you had your name tag, which said shift leader.
Oh. Man.
I remember I was being really excited about clocking in. The first time, you know, I'd seen in cartoons and shows, you know, like clocking, you know, taking their time card and
chunk, chunk.
Yeah.
I never got to do that.
No? Oh,
no.
It's great.
I always did it
it's
via
a great
computer.
It's an awesome experience. I love it. I wonder if they still do it. I should ask Angela.
Yeah.
Or if they have some kind of computer system
going. I feel like everybody's got a computer now.
Everybody does.
I only clocked in via computer.
That so what was your what's another job yet? I can't talk about Fritz's anymore. I could, but I shouldn't.
Well, you mentioned I like this whole thing about the friends, though. I mean, you know, you sort of didn't want to treat that as part of the job.
It was, and
rightfully so. I understand that that wasn't so much the result of the particulars of the job so much as it was the fact that the job brought you together.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what makes an enduring memory, you know, really.
Sure. I mean, I made some very close friends and enemies. No, I don't think I...
You didn't have any enemies in high school, did you? You seem too gregarious. I don't think... You were like, prom king. I'm... I'm shift leader.
I guess I didn't really have any enemies.
Yeah.
But people didn't, you know, there's people don't like me.
Well, yeah, there's people that are just, they're stupid. Yeah.
Oh, I should, I don't know if I ever talked about this. Again, it's Fritz's related, but because my sister worked there, you know, everyone, like, so they called my sister AC, because those were her initials at the time. Mm-hmm. And so when I started, one of the things they called me was Little AC.
Oh.
There was also a guy who worked there called Andrew, and they called him Dirty. Okay? Uh-huh. So when I started there, they called me Little Dirty. Which, you know.
So you were Little AC and Little Dirty.
Yeah. And I was really upset about that initially. And you can guess which one actually kind of stuck. It wasn't Little AC. But I Dirty was actually like he was a veteran. He was, you know, been there for years and, you know, was really good at the job, and so it became.
Did he know that people called him Dirty?
Yeah. I mean, it was a to-your-face nickname,
right?
But it was a point of pride eventually that I was referred to as Little Dirty.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah. You came around to liking it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. That's the arc of your Fritz's journey.
Yeah.
You go from being Little Dirty and hating it to being Little Dirty and being proud.
That's right. Yeah.
That's a good story.
I made, you know, like at other part-time jobs I had, I made some friends, but not, I think Fritz's was probably the part-time job where I made the closest friends.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that was mostly because of the timing?
Yeah. Like? I mean, because that was high school.
Yeah.
You know, and I had plenty of friends at high school, but I didn't really hang out with many of them outside of high school. Mm-hmm. A lot of them I had hung out with them during elementary school.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'd known them for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that was like a fresh new kind of like experience.
As part of that whole job thing, like, is getting to know people who are not, like, I feel like in school, I was always surrounded by people who were basically of the same background
as me. Yeah,
and
totally.
Like, when you get into the workforce, that opens up a little bit more. And you like, people congregate at a job for various reasons, you know, like there's different things that land people in this particular place and time, you know, and they could have a different, you know, they could have a whole different personality than you're used to.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and like Fritz's, that was the first time I met anyone from another school, you know, and I learned about like opinions of various schools in the area, you know, and opinions of my school.
Yeah. That you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But yeah, I, you know, those were my first late nights out. Those were my first like, you know, the coming of age.
Yeah.
Sort of things.
Where you close down, but you're not quite ready to go home yet.
Exactly. Hang out in the parking lot.
Yeah.
I told this story about how I was there till like 4 a.m. once.
Yeah.
And got into some trouble with my parents.
Should just blame Dirty.
Where did you go after the collections?
This was the summer after my sophomore year going into my junior year, I think. Yeah. I don't think I worked at all that summer. I think I worked, I would just like mow lawns and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then when I got back into school, I decided I needed an actual job. And, I came very, very close. I was within steps of working at a Best Buy.
Oh. What do you mean? You walked up to it.
I mean, I applied.
You actually turned an application in.
I turned an application in.
Yeah.
I got an interview.
Whoa.
I passed the interview.
Okay.
They offered me the job.
Yeah.
I think I was going to start out at the cash register.
Yeah.
And then eventually they would like possibly relocate me in another area. I think I wanted to work like in the DVDs and
yeah.
stuff, you know. But the one last thing I needed to do, I had to get a drug test.
Uh-oh.
I remember thinking like, this is weird.
Yeah.
You know? So I go by myself
yeah.
to this lab and pee in a cup and give them the cup with my pee. And then I think, there it is. That's the key to my employment in that little cup.
Oh man.
But so concurrently, I didn't really want to work at Best Buy. And this is a pattern that would play out like over my life where I need to get a job and there's this, somebody says, oh, you should do this. And so I go, well, okay. So I do that. You know, somewhere somebody said, hey, you should try working at Best Buy. But what I really wanted to do was work at the mall. Which is right across the street from Best Buy.
Okay. I know this Best Buy.
Then, and yeah. Right? So I, at this point, my friend Matt and I have been hanging out at the mall every day after school.
Yeah.
This is like September, October.
Okay.
So school's just started again, and we're hanging out there every day after
and
school.
And this is high school, right?
Yeah.
And so you're like, is
it? It's prime.
To flash back for a moment to the high school episode.
Yeah.
Was this, had the new regime been enacted at this point?
Yes. So new regime was in place.
Okay.
Yeah, so we had a lot to rally against, you know. So, yeah, we were sort of disaffected misfits.
Yeah.
And every day go to the mall. Uh-huh. And we had kind of this, like, we didn't really, like, acknowledge it as a pattern, but we definitely had a pattern. Like, we would park in the garage, we'd come up the escalator, immediately go to the cookie thing, get cookies. And then
it's so lame.
I know.
Like in it, like I imagine you guys like getting out of the car, like strutting over.
Oh yeah, slow motion, like, Reservoir Dogs.
We're the
walk
cool
to
guys,
the ball.
Yeah. Sort of like, you know, riding up the escalator.
Yeah.
And looking cool. Let's get some cookies.
Yeah. Oh, we would never say that though.
Yeah,
we would just immediately, you know, we get to the top of the escalator, we kind of roll to the right and sashay down the the hallway to the cookie place. And then my friend Matt had this thing. I don't know what started this. I don't know if he saw the girl and decided to start drinking coffee. Or if he like just decided he was going to drink coffee and then met the girl. But there was a place called Gloria Jean's. It was a little coffee shop.
Yeah.
And he had a thing for this girl that worked there. And not really like a thing, but, you know, he just wanted to go in there whenever she was in there. And so we would start going in there.
Yeah.
And I invariably in our circuit, we would sort of make one circuit. In an afternoon, you know, we would do the cookie thing, we'd do the Gloria Jean's thing, and then we'd continue further on down the mall and stop at a few different places, stop in the arcade or whatever. And sort of at the end of our circuit, at the opposite end of the spectrum from where we come into the mall is Suncoast.
Yeah.
Which was always like, you know, that, I mean, where do you go from there? You have to go back because there's no place else to go.
Yeah,
after you've been there.
Yeah.
After you've been to the promised land, you can't.
Yeah,
where do you go?
What it's funny that you... You parked, you know, the furthest away from Suncoast.
Yeah.
Which meant that after Suncoast, you had that long walk of, like, nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but that's okay, because that allowed us time to come to terms with what had transpired on the journey.
All right, good.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like in Stand By Me when they're coming back, you know?
Yeah.
And they just sort of, they don't say anything.
Right.
Yeah. So we would go to Suncoast, and there was a girl who was working at Suncoast at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I somehow, I guess, just because we were in there every day, I think she just sort of started talking to us,
yeah.
you know, which was a little freaky at first. Yeah. But so eventually, I guess, I don't know if she approached me or if I maybe just talked, had, you know, was in conversation and was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm getting a job at Best Buy across the street. I'd really like to work here. You know, yeah, I don't remember exactly yeah. how this transpired, uh-huh. but she was the window. She was the one who actually gave me the application.
Oh, she's like,
and said,
hold on a second.
Yeah.
Reaches under the desk.
Yes.
Like a ray of light.
Cast it was in. A lot like that. I mean, it felt like I had been blessed.
It was yeah. like, here, you go.
Yes.
You didn't ask for it.
I did not.
Like, you were just like, man, I love.
She
to work
knew
here.
That I wanted to work there. Yeah, and yeah. as I'm it's coming back to me now. I remember she said to me, like, sort of in passing, she was sort of like, hey, Dave, who was the manager at the time, she's like, Dave's going to be hiring for the holidays eventually. Uh-huh. So, you know, this would be a good opportunity to, you know, here's an application.
Had you, at this point, you had gotten the job at Best Buy?
This is all happening sort of concurrently, right?
Yeah.
So I get the job at Best Buy yeah. and they're like, you need to do a drug test. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. sure. And I just sort of like, don't do the drug test, right? Okay. Meanwhile, Dave calls
yeah.
and I meet him. We do an interview in the mall.
Yeah.
Like he says, yeah, let's go out into the mall. So we're sitting there at one of those benches in the mall having this interview, which is probably the best interview I've ever gotten in my life at a job. And he calls, I go through with the drug test for Best Buy and they say, okay, you're going to be starting, you know, a week from now or whatever.
Yeah.
And the day after that happens, Dave calls and he's like, hey, would you like to be a part-time, you know, cashier at Suncoast? And so I remember calling Best Buy with this like grin on my face. Yeah. And I mean, I don't even know if I said a full sentence to them, but I was like, yeah, I actually got another job. Bye.
Oh man.
And I was on my way. I was on my way to the best part-time job ever. It lived up to all of my hopes. It did. It totally did.
It did. No, it didn't.
It transformed me.
I don't want to believe you because I applied at Suncoast and I didn't get called. I probably
stole your job.
The application.
I might have.
Are you guys hiring? You know, and you were probably said, not right now.
No, what I said was we're taking applications.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's what we were always taking applications. We were never hiring. I still say
you jerks. I applied. Never heard back.
There were a lot of people that never heard back.
I can't believe you didn't get me that job. What do you have to say for yourself?
We didn't know each other.
Still.
You were just the kid that came in to buy Dragon Ball Z.
I feel like you should have known.
I don't know.
Like some kind of like, you know, like the force or something like this.
Something pulling.
One day, you know, I will be friends with this person and I have to help them now.
Well, I here's what I'm this is not, I don't know that this is a fair.
No. Oh, no. What? What?
Well, I was a teenager.
Yeah, yeah. So you know? Was I.
So I, you know.
What?
I wasn't looking for like dudes to hang out with,
man,
you know?
Whatever.
I remember this specifically one time, standing at the counter with the assistant manager. I was what we called third key, which
Whoa.
Was like shift
leader.
Shift leader.
Third
so
key.
I had a key to the store.
Yeah.
I could close or open the store
yeah.
by myself
nice.
Or, you know, with another person or whatever. But I wasn't actually a manager because I couldn't work full time.
Yeah.
So I remember standing up at the counter with the assistant manager at the time, a guy named Rob. And we're hanging out, you know, we're just, it's like a Wednesday night or something at like 6:30.
Yeah.
So it's like pretty dead, you know, and we're just kicking. And these two girls walk in. And they're like asking for applications, you know?
Ugh.
And it was one of those weird, like, I mean, it was definitely like a moment, you know, like, whoa, you know, what just happened there? And like, they came back in, brought the applications, ended up hiring both of them.
What?
I had nothing to do with that. I had nothing to do with that.
What, like on the spot?
No, no. Like Rob just took the applications and then eventually they got called in. They had interviews and they got hired.
That is unbelievable.
I had nothing to do with that process. Absolutely nothing to do with it. But I could tell.
Here's the thing. If it had been one person that got a job out of that, out of those two, I may have accepted that. But the fact that both of them got a job.
They both did.
They hired two people at once. That's absurd.
I told you, it was a moment.
How did I not get a job there?
I don't, because you and I never had a moment.
You said you had nothing to do with it.
Well, I had nothing to do with the actual hiring process, but I was there for the moment.
What do you mean?
I'm telling you, that store was like, there was something going on there. It was cosmic or something.
If that were true, I would have gotten a job there. What do you mean? Like they walked in and it was like, this must be.
Yeah.
Come on.
Basically. I had no doubt. When they left, I had no doubt that they were both going to work there.
I can't believe this.
Anyway.
All right. Well, go on.
So Suncoast was great. It was
well, what was
exactly what I wanted. And it was
it?
Exactly what was, it was the perfect job at the perfect time. That's the thing.
I hate you. What was
it wasn't like, you know.
Yes, it was. What was the best thing about it?
Well, I mean, it was probably meeting all those different people, you know? It was working with people who were older, you know, who were like adults,
yeah,
but were still into the same things that I was in, or, you know, similar things. So there was like it was sort of an awakening, in as much as up until this point, I was very much like anti-adult and like, you know, had no interest in ever like being one.
Yeah.
And then I met all these adults who are all very, you know, really cool.
Okay.
And so that was probably the best part of it, I think. And I mean, like, you know, the stuff that you think is going to be great about a job like that, like, oh, I get to stand around and watch movies all day.
Yeah.
It doesn't really work that way, you know? And even when you do, like even when it's like really super slow and there's a movie playing, it's not anything you want to watch.
Yeah.
You know, it's like whatever's brand new and they're trying to push. So that element of it was not great.
Yeah.
You know, but there was like there's so many great like one-off stupid moments that stick with me from that job. And the one that immediately comes to mind is this day. This was sort of later on. I was probably 19 or 20 at the time. And the assistant manager at the time said, you know, we need to open up some new stuff. You know, the stuff that we've got for in-store play is kind of getting stale.
Okay.
And we could do this, like, any of the management could come and, like, just pick something off the shelf and take it out of the inventory for use in-store play.
Okay.
Anything that was PG-13 or lower, we could do that with. So this guy named Mike, he goes over to the shelf and he's like, have you seen this Star Wars or Star Trek 25th anniversary thing? And I said, no, I have no idea what that is. He's like, I don't either. Let's watch it. So he opens this thing and it's like a stage production. It's like an award show, but it's all about Star Trek.
Oh.
and we know nothing about what's happening. We just put it in, start playing. There's nobody in the store. We're just standing there staring at the TV. And it's like, welcome to the 25th anniversary Star Trek extravaganza. And now your host, Ted Danson.
What?
And that was exactly our reaction. Ted Danson walks out and we look at each other.
Wow.
And Mike just starts singing Mac the Knife. And
man.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Stuff like that would happen. And those like memories are fantastic.
I'm so mad.
I'm bumming you out, aren't I?
I'm so mad at you. It sounds awesome.
It was pretty great.
I think what makes me mad is that I've had, you know, a couple part-time jobs that were like, I thought, this is going to be so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly what I want to do, and it's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to meet like-minded people. It's going to be so cool. And what a cool experience, and they sucked. And that was the one that would have lived up to my expectations, and it was stolen out from under me by two girls who you can't even remember who they are.
I know,
no, you can't. And no one else can.
Who they are.
They may be dead.
They're not dead.
All right. Well, we'll pick this up. There's more jobs.
More jobs.
I can't believe we talked for an hour about Fritz's and Suncoast.
This is becoming a pattern where we said, like, here's our broad topic. Yeah. Let's talk about two pieces of it.
All right. Clock us out.